This is November the 8th, 1989. This is Earl Mann. I'm interviewing Hubie Miller for the Oral History Project of Dearborn County. Hubie was born in Lawrenceburg. I'd like for you, Hubie, just to kind of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the World War I period of what you remember about your education at that time, the home, and just life around that period of time that you can remember.
This is Hubie Miller, and I was born in Lawrenceburg on Shipping Street, July the 24th, 1910. I was the son of George Robert Miller and Caroline Messang Miller. My dad was born in Cincinnati, and my mother was born also on Shipping Street, same as I was. The early part of after 1910, that earliest part that I can remember is about, I guess 1915 along in there. And I do remember a little bit about the First World War. I can remember the boys going to service. I can remember an uncle of mine, John Messang, and a cousin of mine, William Messang, both who were left for the service. And John Messang, my uncle, spent time in Europe in the First World War. And in those times, communication wasn't too swift, and you didn't hear too much about it, but we remember watching the troop trains leaving Lawrenceburg and the troop trains coming through Lawrenceburg at that time. The steam engines took the boys through, and there were no trucks or anything like that that hauled the boys off to the service like they did in the past World War, or airplanes.
How about during that period of time, were there very many gatherings like parades, band concerts, anything to promote World War I? Quite a lot of that?
There was a little bit, but not too much. I just have vague remembrances of having band concerts and things of that sort, but nothing like we did in the past wars. And people were anxious, the men were anxious to go to war and serve for their country. They were patriotic. There was a lot of talk against the Germans, of course. And people frowned on them at that time because they knew that the Kaiser was a cause of the First World War. And they were against Germans quite badly. But most of the people in this country of German descent, they were very patriotic. There was nothing that they did anything towards supporting the Germans or being patriotic to the Germans because they knew they were in the wrong and against the United States.
Do you remember anything about German schools going out of existence at that time, or the German language in schools not being used anymore?
No, I don't recall too much of that. When I was in grade school, I don't remember even too much about the German language there. Now, a lot of people, my ancestors and other German people, did speak German language. Some families right there in our neighborhood, they were predominantly German-speaking people. And Their English was very broken. A very close friend of mine that came to Lawrenceburg to live with his grandparents. The grandparents were German, and this boy, he could just speak German just as good as any German people could. And when you were in their household, they talked German. But other than that, there was too much German going on.
Do you remember World War I affecting anything in the food supply, clothing supply, or anything like that you could get during World War I?
No, we didn't, because at that time, most people had their own food. I mean, the farm products and things were plentiful. I know my folks had gardens, and everybody canned food and baked their own bakery goods and had their own meats and things like that. And I don't recall that the stores were short on food or that it was hard to get any time. And I don't recall that anything was rationed like it was during the Second World War.
Hubie, after World War I, did you notice very much of a change in their lifestyle, the way you lived or your parents lived? And what do you remember about the constitutional amendments giving women the right to vote and prohibition?
Well, I remember well the prohibition amendment was in 1919, and the effect that it did have on the community, because this community was predominantly the main manufacturing item was liquor, and there were three distilleries in Lawrenceburg at that time, and one barrel manufacturing plant, whiskey barrel, and that did put some people out of work, because the one distillery went out of business completely, and the biggest one went into the manufacture of commercial alcohol, and the other one went into the manufacture of feeds. But there was people that were put out of work by that. Of course, they didn't employ a lot of employees anyway at any time, like they have in the past few years. And then as far as the woman's suffrage, I can just remember when women did not vote and took no part in government. And I do remember when the amendment was, constitutional amendment was made to allow women to vote. But I don't remember anything too significant about it.
Just for the record, do you remember the names of those distilleries?
Yes. I remember the Rossville Company was the biggest one, and which was later became Joseph E. Sigerman's son. And right next, and practically attached to the Rossville Company, was the Greendale Distilling Company, which was controlled by the Rodenberg family of Lawrenceburg. And then the third one was the Squibb Distillery, which was controlled by the Squibb family, which later became Shenley. And the Rodenberg plant was taken over and all bought by the Sigerman Company when they came in, but most of it was torn down before that time.
You mentioned barrel manufacturing. What other kind of manufacturing do you remember about that time? Were there some automobile plants here?
No, I don't know of any automobile plants. There was A. Dede Cook Deep Well Company, manufacturer of deep well supplies and pumps, and which is now Pearson Hollowell plant here in Greendale. But the A.D. Cook Company was a large company, and they employed quite a lot of men at that time. Of course, most all plants employed men at that time. Up until the World War, we didn't know what it was for women to get out and work in plants like they did after the World War, and that was mostly in World War II. And this barrel plant down there was operated by another prominent Lawrenceburg family, and that was right across from the Lawrenceburg Fire Department on Eads Parkway was the Beyer Cookeridge Company, and they made the whiskey barrels for all the distilleries.
Let's back up just a minute. Back during, right after World War II, well, even during it, I assume, 1918, there was a rather severe flu epidemic, and I know you suffered because, your family suffered because of that. Can you tell us anything more about that?
Yes, there wasn't very many people in Lawrenceburg, families in Lawrenceburg, that did not suffer by the flu epidemic. And my family was hit very hard. I lost a sister and a brother within 3 months apart, and a cousin who lived just two doors apart, and another cousin in Greendale in my dad's family, and they all died within about 4 or 5 months apart, all from the flu epidemic. And practically everyone in our family were sick with the flu, and some of them very ill. Of course, there was no place to take them. They just had to keep them at home at those times. About two or three people in the family were up and around. I was fortunate. I was not very seriously ill, but everybody else in my family, except me and my dad, were very ill.
What kind of medication or anything could you do for that? What could they do for it?
Well, I don't recall what they gave them, but they didn't know what to do. And just the family doctors just made their trips around from house to house and gave them what medicine they knew to give them in those days.
Do you remember anything about the ice gorge around 1917 or 1918 on the river and any effect that it had here?
Yes, I remember the ice gorge. I remember going over to the river to look at it, and I just can't remember too much about it, but I remember seeing it, and it was a sight to behold.
In the 1920s, Hubie, what do you remember about social gatherings and organizations like veterans organizations or the Ku Klux Klan in this area? How prominent were they?
Well, at that time, I don't recall too many social organizations other than church organizations. But there were no clubs like there is today. And at that time, there were no veterans organizations. I guess the American Legion just came into existence after the First World War. And as far as other organizations, you speak of the Klan, I can just remember a few of the marches, and not big groups, but I remember from our kitchen window on Shipping Street, we could look out to the west or to the hillside about where the Lawrenceburg industrial area is now. And on several occasions, the Ku Klux Klan burned crosses over there at night. I remember us looking out and the kitchen window and seeing those crosses burn. But I don't know as they ever bothered any people in Lawrenceburg like they've been accused of. They may have, but you didn't hear too much about it, and I don't think anyone was afraid of it. And I never heard of any racial problems with it. Matter of fact, Lawrenceburg never had too many racial problems that I can recall. They were all good people, and we had no racial problems whatever with other races.
What about the development of things like the automobile and the radio and electricity in the 1920s? Do you recall the build-up of those?
I can remember the first automobiles, Ford Model Ts coming into existence, and I can remember I had an uncle that I think was one of the first ones to have an automobile. He was a mechanic, and he was one of the first ones to have an automobile. And I know we all had a big kick out of it when we first saw them on the streets. And as far as the radio is concerned, I can remember the man who had the first radio in Lawrenceburg, and his name was MacGuffin. And he lived across the street from what is now the Eckstein roofing business, just across the street there. And he had the first radio, built the first radio, and my uncle built the second radio. And he built them, and I can remember when my uncle first built his radio, he worked on them in the kitchen of his house of an evening, and he'd have a whole crowd of people from the street around there watching him work on radios, and when something would come in, we'd all take turns of using the earphone just to hear them. And station KBKA in Pittsburgh was the first radio station in the United States. And I can remember when my uncle built me a little crystal set. And, well, we did listen to that crystal set. And you had a, when they had to have a big aerial out in the backyard and up on a, about a 50-foot poles so they get these stations in. But KBKA was the first station in existence.
Just for the record, do you remember the names of these people, the first radio and your uncle?
Yes. Mr. Lewis Clark. He lived two doors from me, and he was married to my dad's sister. And he was really a machinist and a mechanic. And he retired from Joseph E. Sigram as a machinist. And he always had a machine shop in his home. And he lived on Horry Avenue in Greendale. And matter of fact, he had a stroke in a shop basement one night and never regained consciousness. He was a really a mechanic.
What about motion picture development?
Well, I can remember the silent screens when there was, matter of fact, there was two theaters in Lawrenceburg, the Liberty, that was at one time called the Liedertafel, and there was a Gem Theater on William Street. There were across from the post office on that corner. That was the Gem Theater. And there was one down on the corner of High and Walnut, up on the third floor of what used to be that drugstore there. And my dad operated the film machines up there at one time. And my uncle, Mr. Clark, operated a machine over at the Gem Theater. But the silent screens, that was one thing that we could enjoy because it would only cost a dime for us to go to the show on Saturday night. We could go and watch the movies.
You mentioned automobiles, but how about other kinds of transportation getting from Lawrenceburg, Aurora, and so forth into Cincinnati and areas around here?
Well, the transportation, one thing we had in Lawrenceburg that probably not too many people remember was the CLNA, which was called the Cincinnati, Lawrenceburg, and Aurora Traction Company. And they went from from Anderson Ferry, came down through Cleves, down to Elizabethtown, on down to Lawrenceburg, and they came down along Old 50, and they crossed over the New York Central Railroad, where the new bridge is now, out in Homestead, and came down along the east side of Ridge Avenue, all the way down to Lawrenceburg, where Ivy Tech now is, and then went to the middle of the street, went on up to the corner of Eads Parkway there, and Main Street, Main Street, and then made the left turn and went over to the Catholic Church corner, and went down the middle of the street to the corner of High and Walnut. And then they also went back and they went to Aurora, down Old Highway 50 on the south side of the road. And the end of the line was in Aurora where the bridge that has just been recently remodeled, and that was the end of the line. And I think they had a Y that went to Harrison, but that traction line, it was cheap to ride on. I think it would cost about a nickel to ride from Greendale to Lawrenceburg, and they stopped at about every street corner and picked up passengers. They ran from about 6 o'clock in the morning until 11 at night. And I recall that you could drive to adults, I think, could go to Cincinnati up to Anderson Ferry for about 50 cents. And they would ride children that far for about a quarter. And that was a good mode of transportation. And then, of course, we had the Lawrenceburg New York Central Depot was down in back of down where the levee is on in back of High Street. There were the silos are now that were the People's Coal Company, and that was the Lawrenceburg Depot, and they ran passenger service along with a freight service to Cincinnati and back every day. They'd go up in the morning and take people to Cincinnati to work and bring them back at night on that New York Central line. And of course then we had the B&O was their main line to Baltimore and Ohio through here from Cincinnati to St. Louis. And that was a very heavily traffic. And then we had the New York Central, the Lawrenceburg Junction, which ran from Cincinnati to Chicago daily. That was a big service. So we had a lot of, and there was a lot of freight service here in Duluth.
Do you remember when buses started being very prominent?
Well, I can't remember just when it was, but I do remember when they came into prominence. But and a lot of people rode them.
Hubie, you graduated from high school just about the time the Depression started. Can you tell us the effect that had on, after you got out of high school, about getting jobs?
I can remember the stock market crash in 1929, and of course, work became very slack, and my dad was in the insurance business at the time. And people began to get out of work, and at that time he was an insurance agent and had their daily route that he would cover and collect insurance, small amounts from working people. And as people lost their jobs, my dad couldn't collect the money and couldn't write new insurance, and it made it very difficult for him. And eventually, he had to get out of the insurance business because he couldn't make a living at it. And up until the time that I think he went into the insurance business about 1924, 25 along in there, and had some good years in that. And I know he bought our first car in about 1923 or 24. And used it in his insurance business. But as the insurance business got bad, my dad had to get out of it. And then I graduated from high school and couldn't find a job. There were jobs just not available. And I would find a job at whatever I could do, just work in a filling station, and then they couldn't pay you or couldn't keep going, and you had to find something new. And my dad and I just couldn't find work, hardly anybody could, and a lot of businesses closed.
Do you remember the programs of President Roosevelt? Did they really help relieve the job situation in this area?
Well, it didn't do it right away. Really, that didn't improve until the repeal of the Prohibition Amendment. And of course, just as soon as that happened and these distilleries came back into being and began remodeling the plants, and then people could go to work, and they brought so many people in at that time, and then jobs became plentiful again. And there was work to be found then. And then I had steady work in the filling station there, and things became better. Of course, it wasn't still, I believe, about 1932, wasn't it, after they started bottling plants and hiring a lot of people, and then work became plentiful again.
Was there much of a change in family life then after the manufacturing, after the distilleries opened up, and social life, family life, marriages? Did it affect the people in those that way?
Well, yes, most all family life changed because people were working and they had money to do things, and they built homes and bought cars, and although the higher wages didn't come along until later, and up until the time of the 37 flood, which most people today remember, but family life did change. There were people married, and a lot of social clubs.
Okay.
Factoring plants that I failed to remember before in the early days was the George H. Bishop Saw Factory, which was a very prominent company, a manufacturer of saws in the United States at one time. And my dad worked there when I was a child, and it was a very good place to work. And that's where the Durban Shopping Center, Durban Shopping Center, is now. And another place was the shoe factory here at one time. Good, steady places to work. Of course, wages were small. I remember I went to work in the saw factory for about 15 cents an hour. And that was probably in the early 30s. And the saw factory, or the shoe factory, I went to work there for 17 and a half cents an hour. But it was steady work at that time. And some other industries was the Johnson Furniture Companies here. Johnson Chair Factory was located on High Street across from the courthouse. And I went to work there in the summertime when I was in high school, and at that time their wages were about 35 cents an hour. But that was another good place to work. But of course, along with the Depression, those places went out of work.
Were there any women working in those factories when you worked there?
Yes, women worked in the shoe factory, and women worked in the saw factory, and women worked in the furniture companies at that time.
Mm-hmm. You remember anything about the buggy factory?
Oh, yes. I remember when they made buggies. And there were some women worked there in the upholstery department. Yes, that was quite a place to work too. They weren't big, but they did make a lot of buggies.
Did the 37 flood take any of those out of business?
No, I don't remember. The shoe factory had moved out of here, I think, before the 37 flood, because they went to Harrison, Ohio. They would have stayed in Lawrenceburg. They wanted to buy some land there and close off an alley and make an addition to their company. And if I recall, at that time, the Lawrenceburg Council wouldn't grant their wish. And so Harrison, Ohio made them an offer, and they moved to Harrison, Ohio from Lawrenceburg and became a pretty big industry up there.
This is Earl Mann again. Surely you want to thank Hubie Miller for letting me come into his home and talk with him about the area of Dearborn County during the 1920s, 1930s, and especially the period around World War I.
I hope it gave you something.